Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at www.sfarmmarketing.com.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Friday, August the 21st, 2009. Pro Farmers wrapped up its crop tour. We'll discuss what the scouts found and how it differs from the company projections today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. This is a production of Illinois Public Media. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Pro Farmer's Chip Flory. Our panelists today in studio are Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities from New Market, Indiana, and Jackie Vakes of the Stuart Peterson Group from Champaign, Illinois.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Well, let's open our discussion today with this question. In just a few moments, Chip Flory will join us. Pro Farmer now projects the U.S. corn crop will be a record-breaking 160.1 bushels to the acre, though the total yield is 12.8 billion. Paul Cooley, can you argue with these figures?
On the corn number, I think that it's pretty well going along with that, it's the observation of denitrification, how much rainfall we have to finish out, create the crop out, when's the frost coming in, will it make it? These are all important questions. I don't think there's much arguing about that number today.
And so 160.1, 12.8.
Well, Todd, I have to agree with Paul. I think that we've got the start of a very good crop out here. And when I say the start is just that we have to finish it. It's more the two-thirds of the way through. But it is the rest of the weather here for about another 3 to 4 weeks. But if that weather is good, that might be a little low.
Wayne Nelson, of course, is with L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. And Jackie Vakes is with the Stuart Peterson Group out of Champaign, Illinois. Jackie?
Well, I can't argue with it. When you look at the populations that we're seeing out in the fields, it looks as if Pro Farmer actually dropped some of the harvested acres, so now the big key is going to come in as to what we see for certified acres and if we lose any more harvested acres.
Well, I think we'll bring Chip Flory into the discussion early today so that he can defend his numbers and tell us where that 12.8 came from and whether they dropped the harvested numbers. Hi, Chip. Thanks for being with us today.
Hey, how are you doing? Yeah, we played with the harvested acres numbers just a bit. We took some of those hailed out acres out of Iowa. And what that did was not only it reduced that harvested acre number just a little bit and pumped up our Iowa average, okay? When you take those hailed out samples out of the equation, we felt like it was every bit of what we found out there. And when you take the hail damaged out, you've got to add a little bit to the estimate for Iowa. So we actually went up to 186 in Iowa because we are taking those hailed acres out of the equation.
Chip, when you were in, let's say, Ohio and places like southern Minnesota where it's still on the dry side of normal, mm-hmm. Did you notice a crop that has enough power to go on and finish, or is there stress out there that you're noticing?
Oh, yeah, there's stress. And in south central Minnesota, keep in mind, we were wet when we were in there. Now, that doesn't mean that they've been wet because we were walking in fields that were muddy and you could still see the cracks in the ground. So they were really, really dry. Same kind of story down in southeast Nebraska. They had been dry and were dry when we were there, but that dry land crop out in Nebraska, it just made so much yield before it turned dry. You would think that it would take something off the ear weight out there, and we were pulling heavy ears every day in every stop. So that was a very impressive crop out there in Nebraska. But the maturity issue, yeah, you know, when we were struggling with this number last night, trying to figure out exactly where we wanted to put it, and with some of the adjustments that might need to be made, the comment was made so many times, it just depends on the next 6 weeks. The next 6 weeks of weather is so unbelievably critical for this corn crop this year. It will determine whether or not we're gonna move one way or the other. Well, I'll almost guarantee that 160.1 is going to end up being wrong. It's either going to be better than that or quite a bit worse. In Illinois, for example, we could have put that the Illinois average yield at 175 very easy, but we're anticipating some lighter test weights, and our ear count backed off a little bit from a year ago. So we felt like that was enough justification to pull that crop estimate there down to 172 from USDA's August 1, 175. But give it good weather for the next 6 weeks, and it'll be a 175 crop. If it continues on where we're giving that crop no energy, like on a day like today here in Iowa, 58 degrees, cloudy and rainy, it's giving it absolutely no energy to fill those kernels, then Illinois could be really low, like in that 165. A good example of it is what happened in Ohio last year, guys. USDA on August 1 of 2008 put the Ohio crop at 160 bushel, and it ended up at 135. So there's lots of risk in this yield estimate that we put out.
Hey, Chip, a lot of producers will have been following what you had to say during the week on our air from the Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour, mm-hmm. and there's a difference between the numbers that right. are generated there and what we're discussing today, Pro Farmer. Numbers.
Exactly.
Maybe you could use Minnesota as a good example of how those differ.
That's a perfect state to use. Now, when we do the crop tour, we do the southern part of Minnesota. We get basically up to Redwood Falls. And that it means that we stay in the absolute highest yielding part of the state. Now, based on that, We run our crop tour numbers, and we know that when that number comes in, it's going to be high. And as a matter of fact, since 2001, on average, we have measured the Minnesota crop 12.38 bushels too high. So you've got to take the 185 that we came out of Minnesota with, and at least apply that historical error. That right there gets you down to a 173 roughly. And get you most of the way down to the 170 that we estimated. The rest of that 3 bushels comes in anticipation of some lighter test weights up there because of what you were talking about, that the crop is immature. We're not giving it a lot of energy right now. And as a result of that, we're anticipating some lighter test weights.
Chip, as we look at the beans along the way, then you said it took another 6 weeks of good weather for the corn to make it.
Mm-hmm.
Before we get a significant loss or cutback, how many weeks does it take before a frost for this bean crop to make your number?
You know, on beans, the most important thing in my mind on this bean crop was that every day somebody came home with mud on their boots. And when you give the bean crop water at this time of the year, The biggest risk is that you're going to underestimate what the bean crop can do. We did find some lower pod counts in some key states. Illinois, good grief, down 15% on our pod counts from last year. And then Minnesota, down 2.5% from last year. So in Indiana, I should throw that in there too, being down 8% on pod counts. So we don't have quite as much of the bean production factory up and running in those key states. But the big difference in Minnesota is that we've got plenty of water now in most locations for that crop to finish. We got to get the clouds out of here somehow, some way. We've got to give this crop, both corn and soybeans, some energy and some solar energy to fill those kernels and build up some big bean size.
Just to fill in the gaps, the Pro Farmer estimate for the bean crop is 41 bushels to the acre nationally with a 3.15 billion bushel crop total.
Well, the question I've got, Chip, is I want to bounce back the corn for just a moment. And, you know, the trade is all excited about early frost. I'd like to know your opinion on how much of the crop you think would actually not make it if we went to the normal frost date.
Okay, if we go to a normal first frost date, and I've just, you know, we're fresh off the tour, and this is one of the things that I always try to do. We did it last year, trying to put an assessment on how much of the crop is at risk, and I'm just starting to run those numbers and trying to get it figured out. But I'm telling you right now that we were in an area in Minnesota where that crop still needs 45 or 50 days before it's going to reach black layer. The same is true in portions of Illinois. So 45 days from now gets you right out there basically to October 1. So at that point, would we call it safe from frost at that point? It depends on how much energy we give it between now and then. If we give it some heat and some clear skies, we're going to push it a little bit and kind of race to the finish line and beat that first frost. If we keep it cool and wet, because the water does slow down maturity or slow down development as well, if we keep it cool and wet, instead of 45 days, it may need 50 days. And now we're getting into the first part of October, so much depends on the next 6 weeks. But if everything is normal and we get to October 1 and have a frost in Minnesota, there is probably is somewhere in the range of 20% of that crop that's going to see the top end of yields knocked off. In Illinois, the number is higher than that, obviously. But it's awfully hard to force that early frost down into the central part of Illinois.
Chip, go over a couple of things here about, did you see any evidence of denitrification? Did you see a lot of new grain storage going up? Did you see evidence of this triple stacked hybrids will help you out on some of the diseases and also, some rootworm and corn borer type of thing?
Okay. Grain storage pests, I was trying to make notes as we were going here, and nitrogen. Yeah, there are some signs of nitrogen loss out there, similar to what we saw in Iowa last year, okay? And it is a concern. You know, that Iowa crop with the population that we had a year ago, and obviously with the amount of water that we had and that long finish to the growing season, should have been better than what it was. And it was still good at 171 last year in Iowa, but should have been even better. And part of the reason was because we just leached too much nitrogen out of the fields earlier in the year. When Roger went through Illinois, he said that there are definitely signs that that nitrogen loss is going to be a factor in how that Illinois crop finishes. Now, as far as pests, and I'm going to throw weeds in this too, if anybody gets surprised by aphids anymore, you know, shame on you. They're out there. You know they're out there. Scout your fields and take care of it. We got a good population of aerial applicators out there right now, and if you can't get one in, that you just got to do your scouting on it. And with that in mind, pest management has just been, the last 2 years has been really, really good. We still got some escapes out there in the weeds. We're still seeing some volunteer soybeans show up in cornfields, which concerns me for a couple of reasons. Number one, they're a weed. They're taken away from that corn crop. Number two, they're providing kind of a layover place for soybean diseases and for soybean pests inside of that cornfield that will be a bean field next year. So it just increases your risk that you're going to have a soybean disease, you're going to have a bug out there that's going to hurt you. So we need to be spiking our glyphosate and making sure that we're taking care of those volunteer soybeans out there. The grain storage, you know, as we were going through Nebraska, we had a friend of mine from Memphis that was on the tour with us, and he said, you know, they just don't have a lot of grain storage out here. Well, at that time, we were south of Kearney and south of Grand Island, and the guys, no, they don't have a lot of grain storage because it's either going directly onto a rail or directly to a feedlot. As we continued to move east, he kept pointing out the shiny new steel that was out there, and he said, yeah, okay, I see, I understand. And then there's plenty of storage that's gone up in the last 3 years in the Western Corn Belt, and Roger continues to tell me that there's, you know, good demand for grain builders over in the Eastern Belt as well.
Chip, we'll talk with you again in just a couple of minutes. You are listening to Commodity Week. It's a production of Illinois Public Media. Here are some of the rest of the numbers from the Pro Farmer projections. By state, Ohio at 162, Indiana at 162, Illinois 172, Iowa at 186, Minnesota 170, Nebraska at 172, and South Dakota at 141 bushels to the acre for soybeans. Ohio 45, Indiana 42, Illinois 41, Iowa 51, Minnesota 40, Nebraska 51, and South Dakota 38 bushels to the acre.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. This was a wet and wild week across Illinois, in contrast to the relatively tranquil weather of the past 2 weeks. While it was warmer this week than it has been recently, it was not exceptionally warm. Temperatures this week range from near to slightly below normal over the western half of Illinois to 1 to 2 degrees above normal across the eastern half. High temperatures generally reached the mid-80s on most days the first half of the week, but they were accompanied by muggy dew points in the upper 60s and low 70s. That warm, moist air and some strong upper-level disturbances took care of any developing dryness across Illinois this week. Rainfall for the week was 2 to as much as 5 times normal for the week, with the heaviest rain in west-central Illinois. Most of Illinois received at least a half inch of rain this week, with western and central Illinois picking up 2 or more inches. That rain came from complexes of thunderstorms moving across the state, the most potent of which was Wednesday afternoon. Severe storms spawned tornadoes in 4 counties in central Illinois and 1 in northern Illinois. Wind damage from the thunderstorms occurred in a wide swath across central Illinois. A fall-like weekend will transition into a generally cool start to next week. Another cold front will likely move into Illinois at midweek, bringing a chance for showers and a halt to any significant warming. For the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Friday, August the 21st. 2009. I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists in studio are Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities from New Market, Indiana, and Jackie Vakes of the Stuart Peterson Group in Champaign, Illinois. Our guest on the phone line is Chip Flory of Pro Farmer. Here are the way the numbers settled in Chicago for the week from the corn pit. A high this week in the September contract at 328.5, a low at 304.25. The settlement price was up 2.5 cents at 321.75, and December corn at 326.25 was down 0.5 cent. So the spot bid for corn has dropped, did you know, about $1.20 since late May, early June. December futures are off $1.50. It was October of 2006 when lead option futures broke above $3 on the way up. So now here we are nearly 3 years later, and the market seems to be waiting for something. Isn't there something intrinsically good about $3 corn in the face of a 13 billion bushel corn crop? Jackie Vakes.
Oh, I knew he was going to ask me a question like this. I think there's a lot of things that are good about a $3 price. I think that we are definitely in a different situation in terms of input costs. I think that when you look at demand, the demand situation in 2006 versus our demand situation right now. If we had been facing this size crop in 2006, I don't think we would have broke the $3 level. And so, you know, I think demand is still the key to everything.
Wayne?
Well, Todd, you know, we've looked at a poor livestock industry. It's just been hitting, you know, we get hit on the right side of the head, the left side of the head, then they kick you in the shin. And they needed this corn price to come down a little bit to try to get back a little money. Number one, you know, we saw the placements in cattle up a little bit and people a little more optimistic about feeding some lower priced corn and some good production like Chip's been talking about. I think also the exports, we look for them to pick up and we look for some to come back into the ethanol usage because of the lower dollar and the way that we can pick things up. So the increased demand is what's good about $3 corn. Compared to what it cost a lot of farmers to produce this last year, that's not the good part.
Paul Cooley?
Well, you know, a lot of good points in here. You know, I think there's no surprise with the yield, and I don't think there's much of a surprise with the flat price today. The problem is we have to wait 35 to 60 days in here to get any kind of a realistic issue on, you know, yield and price. So, you know, I think it's a holding pattern USA.
And Chip Lorre, since you started the program with us, you get to continue to answer questions too. Intrinsically good for $3 corn and 13 billion bushel crop?
Yeah, I agree completely. You know, we're into a demand building period on corn right now, and that's just a nice way of saying low price. And that low price or demand building period in corn 3 years ago started somewhere south of 250. Now we're doing it at just above that $3 area. So the dynamic of the market has changed. I don't want to, you know, back in 95, 96, I was one of the guys that said the corn market has moved to a new and higher plateau. Well, I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to say that we'll never be back under 250 again. But at the same time, it is very encouraging to me that we are starting to see that demand increase with prices where they are today.
Chip, you've been on a long, grueling trip here, but is this tour probably the most surprised, the least surprised, tour you've been on? And then the final part of it, the question is, are you sorry you're not long or short tonight after you went through all the corn and bean fields?
Well, the way that the market moved this last week, it wouldn't have made any difference if I was long or short anyway. You know, we just didn't see a whole lot of price movement in the market. And I, you know, I'm gonna change your question on you here just a little bit, and I'm gonna talk about my confidence in those estimates, especially the corn estimate at just call it 160 bushels per acre. Normally, I'm very confident. And normally I'm looking at a crop that I'm sure is going to make it to the finish line without getting hammered. My confidence in this estimate is low. Like I said earlier, 160 is going to end up being wrong. It's either going to be well below that, or it could be another two and a half bushels above it.
we'll let you finish off on that one. So I've got another question that I want to get in about this marketplace. The dollar, Jackie, has been weaker. Crude oil prices are bumping up into what I guess you could call technical resistance to the upside. Mm-hmm. These are usually good signs for the price of corn. Are they?
Well, I think they're good signs for the price of corn on the day that they're doing it. You know, when we look at the trend certainly has been weaker. When you look at the dollar and you look at where it is, you know, it would be not unlikely to see it down at the $75 level, which certainly helps us on the demand side. When you look at the crude oil, it's so very sensitive to all the outside markets. We saw crude oil today go up there and try and go through the springtime highs. Didn't quite make it, but got close, but mostly on bullish information coming out on the economies on Europe and on China. And so without continued, you know, you have to have continued good news about that to keep that going. But it's certainly a positive. There's no question.
Export market going to continue to be as good as USDA projects it will be for the corn market?
God, we sure hope so, Todd. But I'm going to say that I think they've overestimated some of their demand out there. You know, especially as we look at the beans, we've so so heavily front-loaded, and with South America coming on and looking at some of these good prices, we feel that they're going to plant more beans than they did last year. And unless they have weather problems, I think they're going to cut into our second half of the year.
Okay, since you mentioned soybeans, let's get those numbers in. September had a high this week at 1035 and three quarters, a low at 976 and three quarters, settled 1023, penny and a half lower. November beans at $9.73, down 8.5 cents this week. Paul Cooley, on the soy complex, here's where there might be some good news again. Did you know soybean meals rallied $100 a ton since early March, and that September meal finished the week $13.70 higher? Where's all the meal demand coming from?
Well, it's really the export program to China, and the Chinese have tremendous soybean crush margins. Early day one, working for the world's largest soybean processor in the world, whenever you can buy a bean, turn it into a soybean meal and soybean oil, the profits are there. You really don't care how high beans go or how cheap beans go, you make a buck. The Chinese are making tremendous profits on buying these beans and processing. The demand isn't short-term, it's long-term. They're buying ahead. And this is the tremendous demand that we're seeing in the soybean complex. The dollar also is very cheap, and I think that inflation is going to be a major part of the fear. I think the big problem here is I just wonder sometimes as I'm watching those markets if the Chinese aren't stealing the soybean crop just like the Russians stole wheat and corn and beans in the 70s.
Well, I'd like to tag right on to what Paul was saying. The biggest issue I think that we have and the biggest question mark is China really buying the beans to steal the crop, or are they actually in a situation where they're investing in real goods versus buying the debt from the United States? And how do you really track that? How does USDA break down whether it's an investment purchase or whether it's an actual use purchase?
Hey, Chip, you got an answer?
Well, and the other thing that concerns me is We may be getting to the edge of another trade conflict with China, and they need those beans. They might be front loading those purchases just to get them in the bank, get them booked ahead of a potential trade conflict, so that they've got those beans for their future needs.
All right, let's move on to wheat very quickly as well. Futures there in Chicago this week, a 481 and a quarter soft red high, a low at 457 and three quarter. Settlement price was 21 and a half lower. 460 and a quarter was the price. July contract at 531 and three quarters, down 19 cents on the week. I've talked a bit about the positive side of the corn market, and I suspect we don't need to be all that cheery. Did you catch that new crop July wheat traded to a new contract low this week and closed down in that area too? And I want to know what needs to happen in the wheat market to give it a lift.
Well, I think India needs to come in and pick up a bunch of wheat to make up for their shortfalling in their monsoon, Todd. And I think that that is one thing that will possibly happen in the future. The other thing is, we need to see maybe a little bit of talk of some weather problems in Argentina and South America.
I think a quick one on wheat, too, is that the Commitment Traders report, I'm sure, will show that big funds are short wheat by the boatload. The other factor is the index funds have a big chunk of wheat long, and the bear knows that, and they're going to liquidate it, and they're going to steal it quick. There's going to be a lot less wheat planted this coming year.
And finally, a final word from each and everybody that's in the studio. We only have about 50 seconds left. Paul Cooley, we'll start with you.
Hey, a tip of the hat to Chip on his remarks. It's been a big insight. My weather guy's awful dry for the next 2 weeks.
And Wayne Nelson?
I think, as Paul just said, the weather is going to be an important thing of finishing things out. And thank you, Chip.
And Jackie Vex.
And hats off to you, Chip. I can imagine just how tough it is out there. Thanks for taking the time to do this for all of us.
Chip, a final word?
Thank you.
All right. Thanks much.
Thank you very much.
And thanks for being with us all week, Chip. We sure appreciated that. Chip Flory is with Pro Farmer. That is this edition of Commodity Week. You have a great week. I'm Todd Gleason.
Hey, Chip, are you still there?